Welcome back to the Friday session of the California Coastal Commission. Can we start with a roll call, please?
Second. Almost ready. Commissioner O'Malley?
Still here.
Commissioner Eckerly?
Here.
Who is here today? Commissioner Jackson.
Proud to serve.
Commissioner Rodoni?
Here.
Commissioner Kunkel?
Here.
Commissioner Lee?
Here.
Commissioner Lopez? Here. Commissioner Loewenberg? Here. Commissioner Nothoff?
Here.
Oh, yeah, you're here. Commissioner Moreno? It's not. Commissioner Williams is also not here. Commissioner Wilson.
Present.
Chair Harmon.
Here.
I'm here. Sorry. Anthony.
Oh, sorry. Anthony. That's Commissioner Hart.
Here. Thank you. Today.
Perfect.
We have a quorum.
Great. Thank you very much. And I see Commissioner Williams, Commissioner Moreno walking in. Welcome. Now we will go to the virtual meeting procedures, please.
Good morning. This Coastal Commission meeting is occurring both in person and through Zoom. This meeting is also being webcast and can be viewed online at cal-span.org. If you have internet access in which to watch or listen to the meeting only and not speak on an item, we recommend that you use the CalSpan website. Those who wish to address the commission today can do so in person, through the Zoom platform, or by phone. The speaker request forms may be found on the commission's webpage. Paper forms and scannable QR code for a paperless submittal are available on the commission staff table just outside the meeting room. For those on Zoom, we have posted virtual hearing procedures on the commission's agenda webpage, which is a guide on providing comments via Zoom or by phone. Members of the public speaking during general public comment may be given up to 2 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. Requests to speak during the general public comment period will not be accepted after 9 a.m. on the day of each meeting. In order to provide the opportunity for the broadest range of public participation, you may speak on a specific topic one time only each month. Those speaking on an agenda item that is not general public comment are typically allowed 2 to 3 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. We will accept a request to speak on a regular agenda item up until the chair opens the hearing on that particular item. If you have internet access, please go to the commission's webpage and click on the link to fill out a speaker request. If you do not have internet access or prefer to testify by phone, please call the commission staff at 562-477-9089. Again, that number is 562-477-9089. Staff will provide you with a telephone call-in number and instructions for how to participate and provide testimony by phone. We will manage speakers coming in and out of the meeting through a meeting organizer. When it is your time to address the commission, the organizer will invite you to turn on your video and microphone or provide instructions on how to unmute the phone. Madam Chair, that concludes the virtual hearing procedures.
Great. Thank you very much, Galen. Okay. Now we'll move to agenda changes. Mr. Schmidt.
Thank you. Good morning to the commission and to everybody who's joining us today. On the agenda changes, we did have a posted sheet, but there are several changes to that. So I'll walk through that and note the changes as I do. Starting with item 5A, that's CDP application 525690, the Shahazi application, that is postponed. Item 6A, that's CDP application 525754 at 1101 Electric Avenue in Seal Beach, that is postponed also. And that's a new addition. Item 9A, this is CDP application 126141 with the County of Del Norte, Point St. George, Western Lily Habitat Restoration Project, that is moved to consent. Item 9B, CDP application 125392, Smith River Ranch project is moved to consent. Item 9C, that CDP application 125781, the California Trout Elk River Estuary Restoration Project in Humboldt County, that is moved to consent. Item 12A, the CDP application 525139, this is the Driftwood Bluffs Condominium Association in San Clemente, that is moved to consent. Item 12B, CDP application 525664, Howard in Newport Beach, that is withdrawn. Item 12C, CDP application 525663, Rafla in Newport Beach, that is withdrawn. And then newly added this morning is item 13A, the Pacific Edge Hotel Amendment. This is CDP amendment number A5LGB2560A1. Applicants Dune Drifter LLC, that is moved to consent. And that concludes our agenda changes this morning.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And now I'll turn to our chief counsel for her report on closed session. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Harmon. Yesterday, the commission met in closed session. It received litigation information and advice regarding the following cases: Space Exploration Technologies Corporation versus California Coastal Commission, Ramirez Canyon Preservation Fund versus California Coastal Commission, Levy et al. Versus California Coastal Commission, Sable Offshore Corporation et al. Versus California Coastal Commission, and City of Dana Point versus California Coastal Commission. The commission also received litigation information and advice and took action on the following cases: Bel Air Bay Club versus California Coastal Commission, Friends of Oceano Dunes versus California Department of Parks and Recreation et al., and Fowler Packing Company et al. Versus County of Santa Cruz et al. And that concludes my report.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And with that, I will turn back to Chris for public comment. Thank you.
Okie dokie. For members of the public, I will be announcing the names of the upcoming speakers and invite you to speak when it is your turn. Each speaker will be allowed 2 minutes during general public comment at the discretion of the chair. In order to allow for live video testimony on Zoom, we will be bringing you in as a panelist. As we bring you in, your Zoom will reload. This may take a moment. To speed up the procedures, we will bring several people in at a time, but please remain muted and keep your video off until we ask you to speak. After your time is up, you will be moved back to attendee mode. For members of the public present in the room, I will call your names in the order that they appear on our sign-up list. When you hear your name, please line up behind the podium and introduce yourself when you approach to speak. There is a raise hand function that will help us find you in the attendee list. If you are using a phone for audio, you can raise your hand by dialing *9. If you're participating by Zoom, you should see a button on your Zoom screen. If you have signed up to speak for this item and are able to do so, please raise your hand now. When it is your time to speak, we will invite you to unmute and turn on your camera. You can unmute yourself on a phone by dialing *6. So first up, we have Bill Lipe in person.
Thank you. Yeah, good morning, commissioners, chair, and staff. My name is Bill Lipe. I'm born and raised here in Monterey County. And I just want to say a quick thank you to the Caprara family, the Raba family, and Taylor Farms for this beautiful place that they put forward. I wish Dennis was here. God rest his soul. I wish he was here to give all of you some knowledge to all you Joe College types up here. You know, I've got 15 years experience in local water policy. I served on the GSA Board of Directors and have been helped implement the groundwater sustainability plans that are currently on file with DWR. Seawater intrusion's a big problem on the coastal area here, especially in the 18400 coastal area and some of the east side. It's advancing right now under the valley floor, approaching the city limits of Salinas. State intervention is looming if we miss the SGMA 2040 deadline. Yet the people who actually live here keep getting blocked from solving our own problems. In 2018, Measure J was passed by a clear majority of voters, and that was to study the ownership of CalAmp's water system and convert it to a public utility. The staff at the district did the work, did their due diligence, and determined it was feasible and applied to LAFCO for latent powers. LAFCO staff and consultants reviewed the work and recommended approval. But the LAFCO commissioners at the time voted 5-2 to deny that, and that was mostly commissioners from the Salinas Valley that denied that application. That was in 2021. And then in 2022, this commission approved CalAmp slant well permits by an 8-2 vote, keeping the private control in place. The people of the peninsula are still fighting LAFCO's injustice in appeals courts today. The intersecting bureaucracy has repeatedly denied the people of Monterey County the right to determine our own future on the most precious resource we have, that's drinking water. Is that time up already? Anyway, I just hope that you would let us fix our problems. We have some great ideas out there, and we'd just like you to stay out of the way. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leip. Next up, we have, looks like about 8 speakers on Zoom, starting with Camila Rang, Adam Leverenz, and John Doe. Camila Rang, please go ahead.
Good morning. I have a presentation. Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. This is Camila Rang from Del Mar here, reporting again how Sandang is not following their promised mitigation commitments in regards to Del Mar Bluff. In fact, they're doing the opposite of what they promised. I was going to start complaining about Sandang closing the beach access at 11th Street, but just got word that they are working on a way around that. So that's fantastic news. And if you had something to do with that, thank you. Next slide, please. Another commitment was to make an upper bluff path between 4th Street and Coast Boulevard. It has not even started, and in fact, they have made a path that already exists and which their new path will be based on narrower, cut off 2/3 with at a section which we call congestion. This is the most walked path in Del Mar, and suddenly we're all crammed into walking single line to meet at this section. It's completely opposite to their mitigation to create a path. Next slide, please. We also know that they're trying to get out of their commitment to create a safe passage across or under the railroad to the beach. This is the only mitigation that actually meant something to us, since the self-organized sandy walking path already is there. But a safe crossing, that's what was needed, especially now that they are more than doubling the train traffic to over 100 a day. All we want is a very simple tunnel, or at grade, without horns, only arms. People live right by the railroad, so alarms for a minute for every train that passes won't work. Next slide, please. Fourth, I know this was not a commitment from Sandag, but they are uglifying and destroying our bluff, which was once beautiful and filled with white flowers. Look at this. Our hearts cry every time we walk by this once beautiful land. Now it's a concrete gray cement bluff. It's beyond sad that they didn't even bother making the cement sand color just gray. Also, they can run their money-making freight trains. The light rail could easily take a different route, or at least not wear the bluff down with heavy vibration as from the freight and military transportations. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rang. Next up, we have Adam Leverenz, John Doe, and Susan Kirks. Adam Leverenz, please go ahead.
Good morning. Is my audio coming in okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great. Thanks. Again, good morning, commissioners and staff. Adam Leverenz. As you've heard over the last couple of years, I dreamed for about a decade and a half of holding a mooring permit and having a boat in Newport Beach. That was realized in late 2023. What wasn't realized, though, is how intent the city was on restricting access to people with a lot more money than I and many of my cohorts have. The slide up here is Title 17, their harbor code. It's about 70 pages long. There are 9 pages of mooring specific regulations, 4 additional pages if you have a live aboard, 2 legal size pages of thorough vessel inspection. Live aboards do that every year. Other vessels do it when they're placed on the mooring or whenever the city wants to harass them. Next slide, please. Mooring permittees have to name the city as insured on their insurance policies. This next graphic is the number of pages for residential piers, one page, and the vessel inspection, zero pages. Next slide, please. Emails with the Harbor Department asking if homeowners have to insure, register, report ownership of their vessels to the city. They don't. Asking if their vessels have to be inspected. They don't. And just the vast level of oppression, and this is just part of it. I've discovered in the last week I'm under threat of losing my mooring because they accuse me of spending too much time on my boat. Title 17, if you're on a mooring, you're allowed to spend 36 days a year on your boat. If you have enough money to stay in a marina, you could stay there 180 days. It's very difficult to maintain a boat in salt water. The system is designed for failure. And again, SOS, please help us with keeping our access. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leverins. Next up, we have John Dow, Susan Kirks, and Janelle Gallardi. John Dow, please go ahead.
Good morning, commissioners. John Dow with Save Our Beaches, San Clemente. My comments concern OCTA's CDP application for Area 4, which proposes significant additional hard armoring at San Clemente State Park, and OCTA's claim that late added one-time sand placement makes that armoring acceptable. It does not. We already know what hard armoring does in San Clemente. It narrows the beach, increases wave reflection, accelerates erosion, and disrupts the natural movement of sand. Once waves begin breaking directly on a wall or revetment, the sandy beach disappears. Hard armoring worsens the problem it's supposed to solve. Worse, that added erosion is then used to justify more armoring, creating a coastal doom loop that destroys public trust beaches piece by piece. Consequently, OCTA's proposed one-time sand placement of roughly 270,000 cubic yards is insufficient. OCTA's own materials acknowledge that placed sand erodes and requires renourishment over time. Because OCTA and others have cut off natural replenishment, that sand must now be artificially maintained. The question is not whether sand helps. Of course it does. The question is whether a one-time placement can eliminate or mitigate the long-term impacts of a permanent hard structure on shoreline sand supply. It cannot. That is the legal standard. Section 30235 allows armoring only when it is required to protect existing structures or public beaches in danger and when it is designed to mitigate adverse impacts on sand supply. If the commission approves any hard structure here, the Coastal Act requires a continuing obligation to maintain a real sandy beach in front of it for the life of the project. But that exposes a fundamental flaw. If a sandy beach must be maintained in perpetuity, the need for the hard structure disappears. And delay makes this worse. With a significant El Nino forecast this winter, postponing meaningful sand placement creates a foreseeable risk that OCTA will later use storm impacts to justify more emergency rock. I urge you to reject hard armoring at Area 4 and require meaningful continuous sand replenishment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dow. Next up, we have Susan Kirks, Janelle Gallardi, and Walter Lamb. Susan Kirks, please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Harmon, commissioners and staff. I'm sharing today about a tragedy that occurred last week in Morro Bay. For your awareness, an adult female badger was struck by a vehicle on State Route or Highway 1 and killed. Her three cubs were left by the side of the road. Fortunately, a community member discovered them, and Pacific Wildlife Care was able to rescue them and take them in. These cubs are about 3 months old, a little over 3 months old. Juvenile badgers usually disperse from their mother when they are about 5 to 6 months old, or in summer months, June to August. This week, Sonoma County Wildlife Rescue, who has an enclosure that will be large enough for them to grow together and be cared for, for a brief period of time was fundraising, or is fundraising, so Flying Tails, T-A-I-L-S, can fly the Cubs from Morro Bay to the Petaluma Municipal Airport in Sonoma County. Hopefully, they will be able to be cared for, normally develop, and recover from the trauma as much as possible, and be released back to the wild. Also, yesterday in your enforcement item on the property near Big Sur, a group of eucalyptus trees was cited as invasive and scheduled for removal. I'd like to share with you that eucalyptus trees are considered non-native, but they are not invasive and are often planted as windrows. And eucalyptus trees that are mature, like these, are often very important nesting sites for raptors and large birds like great egrets, black-crowned bobwhites, and please conduct bird surveys and then reconsider about removal, because these can be important nesting sites. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Kirks. Next up, we have Janelle Gallardi, Walter Lamb, and Margaret Malloy. Janelle Gallardi, please go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you, yes.
Wonderful. Well, bienvenidos a mi comunidad de Gonzales. This is my hometown, and I am a fifth-generation farmer's daughter struggling to keep my family farm alive. These have been some of the worst financial years of our operation in its 50 years of existence. The regulatory costs on farmers have exploded with an increase of over 1,300% since 2006. Agriculture in California is experiencing death by a thousand cuts. When I think of all the government-appointed agencies that are non-elected by taxpayers like myself, like the California Commissioner, I feel my community of Gonzales is a minority representation. I am so thankful, though, for the appointment of Chris Lopez to help make our voices heard. California is the number one agricultural state in America. Even Mr. Newsom at one point said our industry was essential, and I still believe it is. California farms are consistently disappearing over the last 50 years compared to the overall population of California, which has more than doubled. Yet our water infrastructure has remained unchanged since the 1970s. And do not let these weather reports fool you. We will never be in the clear when it comes to drought conditions, because there will always be another one looming. We must build more water infrastructure and stop letting 50% of our captured water escape into the ocean. I don't understand when we talk about rising sea levels that we're just adding more fresh water into the ocean, making the problem worse. Also, our farm workers are living in conditions with 1 to 3 families in a single home due to the extreme lack of housing, not just in my county here, but all across the entire state. I highly encourage the Coastal Commissioner to streamline housing permits and projects. Everyone forgets about us, farmers and farm workers, but I know Chris will truly represent our community, and I really pray that we can improve the lives of rural Californians and agricultural workers, because we are the backbones on everyone's kitchen tables, providing the food that we eat. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Pardon me, very much, Ms. Gallardi. Next up, we have Walter Lamb, Margaret Malloy, and Annie Griffin. Walter Lamb, please go ahead.
Good morning, Commissioners. Walter Lamb, representing the Bino Wetlands Land Trust. I want to quickly raise an issue that we've been experiencing at the Bino Wetlands with the SoCalGas abandoned wells. So just a bit of background. Our organization supported the abandonment of these wells. We supported the CDP, and we were very appreciative of staff for including language in the coastal development permit that preserved our access through the process, that we were able to continue conducting field trips and stewardship, habitat stewardship. And then when the project was done, we were really excited to have this sort of blank slate. And you can see all the mulch that got laid down where there used to be, you know, fenced in gas wells. Our concern rises from the fact that we were expecting SoCalGas to very quickly install native plants and to make sure that non-native weeds were not sort of going to overrun the site. Our experience is that if you do nothing, even if you laid down, if you disperse a lot of seed, That can very often be ineffective because the invasive seed bank can be pretty substantial. And we're seeing that now. If I could have the next slide, please. That's castor bean already starting to sprout up. We're going to see, without any immediate action, we will just see this overrun with all the invasive weeds that are on the sides of this. And so we've communicated this to your staff. Your staff's been really responsive, and we appreciate that. But I think the concern is, if I could have the next slide real quick. So our stewardship site is on the left side of this road, and the abandoned gas well is on the right side of this road. If the right side gets overrun with invasive weeds, that's going to make our job more difficult on that left side. So we have a very specific reason to be concerned, let alone just the general health of the ecological reserve. I'll keep coming back, because what we want is for SoCal Gas to just realize that they are a little bit under the microscope. If we don't address this now, it's going to become increasingly hard. If SoCal Gas isn't required to do something, they're probably not going to do it. So it has to be a requirement, not optional. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lamb. Next up, we've got Margaret Malloy, Annie Griffin, and Brian Rosen. Margaret Malloy, please go ahead. Ms. Malloy, it looks like you don't currently have a mic connected.
I moved her back to attendee. We'll see if she can unmute as an attendee.
Okay, Ms. Malloy, can you unmute as an attendee?
Thank you very much.
There we go. All right, please go ahead.
Next up, we've got Margaret Malloy, Annie Griffin, and Brian Rosen. Margaret Malloy, please go ahead.
Hello, commissioners. First, I want to uplift the comments of Ms. Gallarte.
Ms. Malloy, it looks like you don't currently have a mic connected. We'll... Yeah.
Hello?
If she can unmute us.
Oh, okay, Ms. Malloy, can you unmute as an attendee?
I am unmuted.
There we go. All right, please go ahead.
Can you restart the clock, please?
Ms. Malloy, me, Griffin... Brian Rosen.
Commissioners, first I want to uplift the comments of Ms. Gallarte.
Ms. Malloy, it looks like you don't currently have a mic connected.
We're experiencing some problems clearly with the audio. Do we need a minute? Or
every time that you're unmuted.
1 second, Ms. Malloy.
Margaret.
Can we pause, mute her for a second while we sort it out? Thank you so much.
There's audio playing back from you, Margaret. It keeps repeating over. I'm going to try to unmute again and see if that keeps happening. Please try to unmute.
Hello?
Yes.
Just the comments. Hello. I'm hearing myself.
Ms. Malloy, please mute any audio that you have going in, even if you can't hear yourself talking. It's all echoing back and coming back through. So... go ahead.
We'll come back to you in a second. We'll move you down a few people to get it worked out. We'll move on to Annie Griffin, Brian Rosen, and then Nina Beattie.
All right, Annie Griffin, please go ahead. All right, Ms. Griffin, you should be able to go ahead and speak.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Please go ahead.
Yes. Good morning, commissioners. Jack Cohen is a fire scientist, now retired, but when he was employed by the U.S. Forest Service Fire Science Lab in Missoula, Montana, he was considered the top go-to man for how to reduce wildfires in wildland-urban interface settings. Mr. Cohen's research over the years has informed nationwide strategies on how to prevent and manage wildland urban fires. And he states that eucalyptus trees are no more flammable than other trees, and that removing them or planting other vegetation will not stop wildfires. Because the problem is not eucalyptus, it is a house ignition zoning problem. And to this day, your board has been complicit in ignoring that advice. It is time to tell the developers and the housing community that they can no longer build wooden fences and that the developers need to use non-flammable materials because that's the real problem. The thousands of eucalyptus trees cut down in this witch hunt means thousands of tons of greenhouse gases has not been absorbed by these trees. The loss of rainfall all trees create, oxygen lack, loss of habitat for monarchs who prefer eucalyptus to all other trees despite the false science trying to villainize them. We have to change and we have to stop blaming the trees because the timber industry is brainwashing all of us to believe it's the trees that are the problem and they're raping our forest as we speak. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Griffin. Next up, we have Brian Rosen, Nina Beatty, and then we're going to try Margaret Malloy again. Brian Rosen. Brian Rosen, please go ahead.
I'm here. Brian Rosen, I want to tell you a little story about eucalyptus trees. There's a trail behind Santa Barbara that I've been hiking since the 70s. And way up, maybe halfway up, there's two eucalyptus trees, just two small eucalyptus trees. They're, I don't know, 40 feet high. And then the Big Thomas fire came through and it wiped out the forest all the way from Ojai to Santa Barbara. And I hiked up there and all the beautiful pine trees up there were gone, all the shrubs. But the only thing that survived up there were those two eucalyptus trees. I found that very interesting. So eucalyptus trees, sometimes they're even a little resistant to fire. And sometimes they form magnificent windbreaks that keep the embers from spreading. And looking online at the National Park Service and other websites, it's mentioned they can be a mixed bag. But one way to severely reduce fire danger is to you cut a lot of the lower branches and clear the ground. Now, when you to approve new houses in the coastal zone, we should insist on non-flammable materials. Wooden fences are highly flammable, and I hope the Coastal Commission could insist on much stronger standards. Eucalyptus trees are beautiful trees. They provide a lot of habitat, like down in Santa Barbara, for the hawks and the monarch butterflies. And we need to make sure there's a lot of community engagement because they're being villainized. You know, most of us we're non-natives. I'm a non-native. Only Native Americans are natives. And maybe we all need to learn to live to each other and tolerate different kinds of plants. They're all a valuable part of our ecosystem. And these big, magnificent eucalyptus trees that have been here longer than any of us definitely have a place, and they need to be respected and not villainized. Oak trees burn down very, very well, like in the Thomas fire. Any kind of tree can burn. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rosen. Next up, we have Nina Beatty, and then we're going to try Margaret Malloy again. Nina Beatty, please go ahead. Ms. Beatty, you can go ahead, please.
Good morning. This week we'll be faced with Earth Day. And this is a very different Earth Day than we've had in previous years. We're faced with disasters internationally. I'd like to give a quote by Dr. Seuss. He said, unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing is going to get better. It's not. The Iran war is just a horror zone. One of the issues that's not being discussed is the role of PFAS and the coast and the ocean. When there's a fire at a gas field, at a tank farm, they use PFAS compounds in the firefighting foam. It's linked to cancer, immune dysfunction, and many other problems. It flows, the runoff flows into the groundwater. It flows into the marine environment. The EPA is committed to keeping drinking water under 4 parts per trillion, and a release in Brunswick, Maine, resulted in thousands of gallons, and PFOA was 69 million parts per trillion in liquids, and PFOS, P-F-O-S, was 78 billion parts per trillion. That is a small fraction of the amount of PFOS going into the environment during the Iran war. And this is going to bioaccumulate in seafood. It's going to be transported across regions. The second thing I want to bring up is about the Vandenberg Space Force base plans to expand. They want to bring heavy and super heavy rockets to Santa Barbara, to the smallest, to the most southern part of the base that's near Santa Barbara. There's ozone destruction that results already from our rocket, our aerospace industry, the tremendous damage at Boca Chica from the Super Heavy and the other launches, including debris and pollution and wildlife damage. This is not harmonious with Earth Day, with caring for the Earth. If we want to protect our wildlife, if we want to protect the ocean, we have to stop the aerospace industry from doing the damage it's doing. There's a film on Saturday at the Marina Library, The Earth's Greatest Enemy. I invite you to attend that. I have information.
Thank you, ma'am.
The PowerPoint I would have prepared for the Coastal Commission is on my...
Thank you, Ms. Beatty. We're going to try Margaret Malloy one more time. Ms. Malloy, please go ahead.
Apologies for the earlier confusion there. I want to uplift the comments of Ms. Galarte and the appointment of Commissioner Lopez. Our agricultural industry is critical. It's the basket of life. So thank you for speaking on that. I wanted to talk about the City of Los Angeles LCP program and the city's continuous violation since the city's approval in 1978. That approval had a very specific prohibition on administrative permits as a violation of the Coastal Act and on appeal fees as a disincentive for broader participation. City has violated both for 40 years. Nobody can ignore that, but it is being ignored. So I'm asking for a meeting of senior staff with residents of the Oakwood area in particular. It is the first and only remaining intentional African-American coastal community on the entire California coast, and it's being decimated by violations of the city CDP program and unaccountability by the commission. When the commission approved the second CDP amendment on June 8th, 2023, it wrote, the Coastal Act provides that when a local government chooses this option, which is Coastal Act Section 30600B, it shall submit its permit review ordinance for review by the commission, Section 13304 of Title 14 of the California Code of Regulations also applies. The VSO was never approved. The VSO is cited by commission staff all the time. It's an administrative permit.
Thank you, Ms. Malloy. Okay, that concludes everyone that we've been able to find. We have a few names of people who signed up to speak, but we have not been able to find them in Zoom. Those folks are Jane Reldon, Katrin Homan, and Lucia Casalenuovo. So Jane Reldon, Katrin Homan, and Lucia Casalenuovo. If any of you can hear me, please go ahead and raise your hand. Okay, looks like we cannot find them. That concludes general public comment.
Great, thank you very much. And thank you to the public for participating. I will return to the commission and see if anyone has any comments. Questions? Okay, Commissioner Lopez.
Yeah, I just want to thank all the public who engaged with us today and share just one story that around the eucalyptus trees, it matters to me. We're sitting in Gonzales today. It's the reason I want to share this story. There was a father named Ezekiel who was on Highway 101 with his two-year-old daughter traveling north when a eucalyptus tree fell and took his life. There was his wife was pregnant and he never got to meet his second child. That was one of those moments that got me to deep dive on eucalyptus trees, worked with Caltrans to remove thousands of trees along a specific dense corridor that was extremely windy, which was the reason Ezekiel's life was taken. So sitting in Gonzales today, I just felt moved to share that and to share that there's real impacts, and I agree we need to plant more trees. So while we may disagree on which type of tree, I share the feeling that we do need to replant, and especially in my opinion, natives. I appreciate the passion and look forward to continuing that conversation with Mr. Rosen, as we have in the past, through both public comment and one-on-one. But thank you all for engaging on that level. And I just lastly, she had to leave, but City Councilwoman Maria Orozco is with us this morning. She's a former mayor as well here in Gonzales. And so while she had to leave the room, I just wanted to thank her for joining us this morning, as well as to those folks who commented on water and the importance of the Salinas Valley to the rest of the world. It means a lot to have you share those comments this morning. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. And with that, we will move to those items that were moved from the regular calendar to consent. Mr. Schwing.
Thank you. So yes, items 5 and 6 were postponed, so we're on to item 7. There's 5 items we're recommending be moved to the consent calendar this morning, starting with item 9A. This is the Del Norte County restoration project on the Point St. George headland to protect the federally endangered western lily. Item 9B, project that includes revegetation, access improvements, and other mitigation to resolve a violation along the Smith River in Del Norte County. Item 9C, significant restoration project in the Elk River estuary in Humboldt County to improve water quality, fish, and aquatic habitats and provide public access amenities. And item 12A, for deck repairs and other improvements to address geotechnical hazards at a condominium complex on a coastal canyon and blufftop lot in the city of San Clemente. And last, item 13A, for changes to the plans for remodeling the Pacific Edge Hotel along the oceanfront in Laguna Beach, including a reduction in the total number of newly added hotel rooms and consolidation of on-site parking into a new parking garage. I'll just turn things over to Deputy Director Shanna Gray for some comments on the North Coast items, and then I'll finish up with a couple of comments of my own.
Shanna, thank you. Good morning. First, with regard to item 9B, this is the restoration project along the Smith River. We received one comment letter from a representative of the Talawa Dini Nation with specific project questions. Staff addressed these questions in addendum to the staff report, which can be found under the addenda tab for this item. No other correspondence was received, and staff is not aware of any opposition to this item. Therefore, we continue to recommend that this item be moved to consent. Next, with regard to item 9C, the Elk River Estuary Restoration Project, staff would note that an addendum was prepared for this item to address the applicant's request to waive the permit application fee. Special consideration for fee waivers is given to nonprofits such as CalTrout for undertaking publicly funded voluntary restoration and access projects, and staff recommends waiving the fee in this case. Staff also received correspondence from the Humboldt County Farm Bureau yesterday in opposition to the project. The Farm Bureau raised issues related to conversion of agriculture, funding, long-term maintenance responsibilities, land ownership, and fencing and grazing in the project area. Staff have reviewed these issues and continue to recommend approval as presented in the staff report and addendum, including findings that fully address the permissible conversion of agriculture to restored habitat. In this case, the project is a voluntary collaborative effort among the property owners to comprehensively plan for the resiliency of the lower watershed in a manner that's intended to assure the continued viability of agriculture, along with protecting water quality, cultural resources, wetlands, riparian, and aquatic habitats. The viability of agriculture in the project area has generally been diminishing over time. This is as a result of sea level rise and long-term drainage failures. And the restoration plan was developed to help address those issues through floodplain design, eco levees, and improved fish-friendly drainage structures in strategically located areas. The grazing limitation and wildlife-friendly fencing are part of the proposed development, which was established jointly by the property owners, and staff concurs that these are appropriate here. In sum, staff determined that the correspondence did not raise any new significant issues. In addition, the applicant has more fully responded to the Farm Bureau's concerns and correspondence for this item, which is posted under the correspondence tab. For these reasons, we continue to recommend that this item be moved to consent. We are available for any questions you may have, and the applicant and their consultants are also available. I will now turn it back over to Mr. Schwing.
Thank you. So staff would also note there's an addendum on item 12A. That's the Driftwood Bluffs condominium project. There's just a minor correction to special condition 7. And on item 13A, the Pacific Edge Hotel, there's correspondence raising concerns about construction phase impacts on traffic circulation and conformance with geotechnical requirements, which staff has responded to and addressed in the staff report addendum. There's also comments from one member of the public and from the city of Laguna Beach in favor of the project. So with regard to these matters, the applicants are in agreement with the staff recommendations. We're not aware of any other opposition, and staff recommends that the commission vote and approve the items on consent.
Great, thank you very much. Are there any ex partes to report? Seeing none, any public comments?
Yes, we have Rachel McCain, who signed up from the Tolowa Dene Nation regarding items 9A and 9B. We are not seeing them on Zoom, but we do see another representative from the Tolowa Dene Nation. Was it Cynthia Ford? And we have moved them in. Cynthia, you should be able to go ahead.
Aloha, this is Rachel McCain. I'm the Natural Resource Department Director for the Tolowa Dene Nation. I just wanted to extend our department's support for this Western Lily Restoration Project. We really appreciate the hard work of local CDFW staff in reinvigorating this effort and helping to bring together the many partners in the area out there at the vicinity of Tagiyan, which is also known as Point St. George. So we just wanted to make sure that the commission is aware of the fire history in that area. Tolowa Dene historically burned that area for millennia, and the cessation of that practice has led to some of the habitat degradation that is also now affecting the Western Lily. So we're happy to continue with implementation of the activities outlined in this permit and beyond with the support and coordination of all parties involved. And that's all we had on that item. Thank you.
Thank you. And then for all items, 9A, 9B, 9C, 12A, and 13A move to consent. We had people available for questions. We had no other speakers signed up.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Any comments? Seeing none? Okay. Then I will return to the commission. Comments, questions, or a motion?
I'd like to make a motion to approve these items moved to consent. All great projects. Very happy that they're happening, some in Humboldt County, some in Del Norte. And, the restoration, yay.
Second.
Yeah, restoration, yay, indeed.
Second.
Okay, it's a motion by Commissioner Wilson, a second by Commissioner O'Malley, and we will take a roll call vote because we have a commissioner online today. Thank you.
All right, Commissioner O'Malley?
Yes.
O'Malley, yes. Commissioner Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. Commissioner Jackson?
Yes.
Jackson, yes. Commissioner Rodoni?
Yes.
Rodoni, yes. Commissioner Lee?
Yes.
Lee, yes. Commissioner Lopez?
Yes.
Lopez, yes. Commissioner Loewenberg? Stepped out. Commissioner Nothoff?
Yes.
Nothoff, yes. Commissioner Moreno?
Moreno, yes.
Moreno, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Chair Harmon?
Yes.
Harmon, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Great. Thank you. The consent calendar is adopted. Okay. Move on to item 8, I think.
Item 8 is the Deputy Director's Report for the North Coast District, which includes one waiver and one immaterial amendment for development in Humboldt County. The waiver being reported to you today is a Humboldt Bay Harbor District project involving sediment sampling in multiple locations within Humboldt Bay to help identify suitable areas for eelgrass mitigation opportunities. This will provide important data for mitigation planning related to the district's proposed heavy lift marine terminal project. And the immaterial amendment is for an additional 3-mile extension of broadband infrastructure for the purpose of bringing last mile services further into the Samoa Peninsula in Humboldt County. This advances the goals of the original project, as well as the goals of the state to increase the availability of reliable high-speed internet access to underserved areas in the region. Staff is not aware of any opposition to these items, and we are asking whether 3 or more commissioners object.
Great, thank you very much. Any ex partes? Any public comments?
There are no speakers for this item.
Thank you very much. Do 3 or more commissioners object to any item in the Deputy Director's report? Seeing no objections, the commission concurs. Thank you. Okay, that brings us to item 10, please.
Thank you. So item 10 is the Deputy Director's report for South Coast District, Orange County. In this packet, we're reporting 4 waivers for several home remodels, including ADU projects in Seal Beach, and 1 small sand placement project at Capistrano Beach County Park in Dana Point. Staff received 1 email with comments on the sand placement project, suggesting the county look at rock placement, shoreline armoring, as a more permanent measure there. But otherwise, no known opposition, and we're asking whether 3 or more commissioners object to any of the waivers or extension, any of the waivers in the report.
Thank you. Any ex partes? Any public comments?
No speakers.
Great. Do 3 or more commissioners object to any item in the Deputy Director's report? Seeing no objection, the commission concurs. Thank you. All right. Item 11A, please.
Great. And there is a staff PowerPoint presentation on this matter, if we could bring that up. And Dulce Cortez with our Long Beach office will be doing the staff presentation on this matter. Dulce, as soon as you're ready, please begin.
Awesome. Thank you, Carl. Good morning, commissioners. Item F11A is a local coastal program amendment request submitted by the City of Newport Beach. The proposed amendment would revise both the certified land use plan and implementation plan to implement the city's adopted 6-cycle housing element within the coastal zone. This presentation will provide an overview of the proposed housing opportunity overlay, staff's analysis, and the recommended suggested modifications. Next slide, please. The city proposes to establish a new housing opportunity overlay applicable to 26 parcels located within the coastal zone. These parcels are part of a broader set of housing element sites, and the overlay would allow residential development in addition to the underlying land use designations, including commercial, visitor serving, marine-related, and open space and recreational uses. The standard of review for the land use plan amendment is Chapter 3 of the Coastal Act, while for the implementation plan amendment, the commission must determine whether the proposed changes conform with and are adequate to carry out the certified land use plan. Next slide, please. Within the coastal zone, the 26 proposed housing opportunity overlay parcels shown in blue on this map and this slide have a combined capacity of approximately 1,441 residential units. This represents only a portion of the total 8,174 units allowed on site citywide, which includes sites both inside and outside the coastal zone. Several of the coastal zone sites are currently designated for visitor serving or marine-related uses, while others are developed as recreational open space. The primary concerns regarding the housing opportunity overlay amendment center on sites 23 through 26 in the airport area, shown within the yellow oval in the upper right corner. These parcels are presently designated for open space and recreational uses and are located immediately adjacent to the Santa Ana Delhi Channel. The channel is site of the Orange County Public Works Channel expansion project, which includes the restoration and creation of riparian habitat that Commission Ecology staff has identified as potential ESHA. Next slide, please. Staff identified several key issues related to Coastal Act consistency. These include the potential displacement of priority, visitor serving, and marine-related uses, impacts to public recreation and open space, the need to protect habitat areas adjacent to the Santa Ana Delhi Channel, and the presence of cultural resources on several sites. Each of these concerns relates to core Coastal Act policies and is addressed to the suggested modifications discussed in the following slides. Next slide, please. The proposed land use plan amendment would allow residential development at densities ranging from 20 to 50 dwelling units per acre, regardless of the underlying land use designation. However, as submitted, the amendment does not adequately ensure the retention or replacement of priority visitor serving and marine-related uses. The city's certified land use plan, consistent with the Coastal Act, prioritizes these uses over residential development. As a result, without additional safeguards, the proposed overlay could result in the displacement of uses that are specifically protected under the Coastal Act. Therefore, staff recommends modifications requiring that where such priority uses exist or are planned, they must be retained, replaced, or supplemented with functionally equivalent uses when residential development is proposed. Next slide, please. The proposed implementation plan amendment would add in a new section, section 21.28.070, to establish development standards for the housing opportunity overlay. The amendment also identifies four overlay sub-areas. However, staff recommends removing the housing opportunity -2 sub-area due to its location within the deferred certification area where the local coastal program has not yet been certified. In addition, staff has identified the need for modifications to ensure that development under the housing opportunity overlay remains consistent with existing LCP policies addressing natural landforms, scenic and visual resources, cultural resources, and habitat protection. Next slide, please. Without these modifications, the housing opportunity overlay could allow residential development to displace hotels, visitor-serving commercial uses, or marine-related uses, and could also result in loss of recreational open space and reduced public access on certain sites. To address these concerns, staff recommends modifications to prohibit the conversion of overnight accommodations to residential use, require the retention or replacement of priority coastal uses, and ensure that open space and recreational uses are preserved where they currently exist or are planned. Next slide, please. The key suggested modifications reflect this approach. These include removing the housing opportunity -2 sub-area from the overlay, requiring the retention or replacement of priority uses under the Coastal Act, prohibiting the conversion of hotels and overnight accommodations, establishing habitat buffer requirements adjacent to the San Ana Delhi Channel, requiring a public accessible recreational corridor, and ensuring that development remains consistent with cultural and habitat resource protection policies. Next slide, please. Sites 23 through 26, shown in the teal within the yellow box, are located adjacent to the San Ana Delhi Channel, where a planned restoration project is proposed to restore and/or create environmentally sensitive habitat areas. Given this context, staff recommends establishing a minimum 100-foot buffer consisting of a 50-foot ESHA buffer located immediately adjacent to the channel and an additional 50-foot transitional buffer that allows for a public access trail and low-impact recreational opportunities. The full 100 buffer is necessary for three key reasons. First, it provides the minimum space needed to ensure protection of biological resources and maintain the habitat functions associated with the planned restoration project. Second, the additional 50-foot transitional buffer accommodates low-impact recreation and a future public access trail in a manner that avoids resource degradation and maintains compatibility with adjacent habitat. Third, maintaining this wider setback reduces development pressure along the channel and improves hazard avoidance by preserving open space that can support stormwater management and reduce potential flood-related impacts. Together, these components ensure protection of biological resources, habitat functions, and low-cost visitor-serving recreational uses, while still allowing residential development to occur on these sites in a manner consistent with the Coastal Act. After a staff report was published, Commission staff received several letters in opposition to the project with regard to habitat protection, development feasibility, and open space preservation, which are posted as correspondence with this item. To address these concerns, Commission staff posted an addendum that refines suggested modification 6 and clarifies findings while maintaining the level of resource protection necessary for Coastal Act consistency. Next slide, please. In closing, staff is recommending the Commission take the following actions for the amendment request. First, staff recommends that the Commission deny the LUP amendment as submitted. Second, staff recommends that the Commission approve the LUP amendment with modifications. Third, staff recommends that the Commission deny the IP amendment as submitted. Lastly, staff recommends that the commission approve the IP amendment with modifications. This concludes staff presentation, and staff is available for questions.
Great, thank you very much. I'll return to the commission and see if there are any ex partes to report.
I was staring at it up on my screen, just listening. All right, so I had a meeting on the 13th of this month with Don Schmitz. It was initiated by Diana Springer. Present in the meeting were Jaime Murillo, Don Schmitz, and my chief of staff, Priscilla Ramos. We talked about this particular project, some concerns about the trajectory of the trail through the property and what that might do to usability and potential count of units on the property.
Commissioner Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also had a discussion yesterday morning, I think it was about 10:30 for about 4 to 5 minutes, with Mr. Schmitz, highlighting the same concerns that Commissioner Lopez outlined.
Thank you. And I had a similar meeting that occurred this morning at 8:40, just a few minutes talking about the same issues, but also noting what a huge amount of work has gone into this from both sides, and just how getting 95% of the way there is also a huge success. So, okay. With that, I will turn it to Galen. Thank you.
All right. And we also have Mr. Schmitz in the room. If you'd like to step up to the mic, Mr. Schmitz, how much time would you like? I just pressed the button there.
Probably more than you're willing to give me, but the normal 15 minutes is adequate. I'd also like to say, Chair, that there's two other people from the city which are signed up to speak. But Ben Zadiba, who's here, he's here to answer questions. And also the city attorney, Yolanda Summerhill, is logged on to answer questions as well. And am I going to get a clicker? No, okay. We'll do the next slide thing. Good morning, commissioners. Thank you very much. Before you start the clock, if you'll get my PowerPoint presentation up, I would be grateful. We need every second. So the city adopted its sixth cycle of its housing element. There was 50 public meetings to do this, and the proposal is to align us with the state housing mandates with the coastal resource protections. Next slide, please. Most of you are intimately familiar with HCD and the regional housing needs assessments. They required us to have 4,845 new units. We appealed that, by the way, and asked it to be ratcheted back to 2,426 units. We were denied that. So we have to produce this or fall out of compliance with HCD. We must demonstrate realistic development capacity within the coastal zone. Next slide, please. You've seen this slide. We have 26 sites within the coastal zone. It's important that we have sites within the coastal zone. Assembly Bill 686 does not allow segregation of housing within a few neighborhoods. The Fair Housing Act requires inclusive communities, and of course our own Coastal Act 30604H requires equitable distribution of environmental benefits. That includes housing, and the Commission has taken that position a number of times. Next slide, please. We must balance coastal resource protection, feasible housing, in housing rezoning to meet those state requirements. So we have to have a balanced approach in regards to this. And I do want to take a moment before we talk about the one professional disagreement that we have with staff. I want to sincerely give a heartfelt thank you to Mr. Schwing and the entire Coastal staff team. They worked with us for a long time. We're in agreement with all the other suggested modifications here. They put a tremendous amount of good faith effort in regards to this, and we are very grateful. So next slide, please. We do have a disagreement in regards to the golf course property. Will you tell me when I'm at 10 minutes, please? I don't have a clock readily apparent here. Which is a very important site for us to meet the HCD requirements. Next slide, please. This is a piece of property, these four sites, these four parcels, that could produce up to 693 units. That's a huge percentage of the units within the coastal zone. So it's a critical site for us to meet the HCD requirements. Next slide, please. You can see that staff did mention the Delhi Channel Improvement Project. This is roughly the area that is currently being reviewed by the Coastal Commission staff. The County of Orange has an application. Next slide. The Santa Ana Delhi Channel Project application is still incomplete with the Coastal Commission. It's still in flux. That's very important. So Orange County is also negotiating with this property owner. Remember, we're here from the city. We don't represent the property owners. But they're negotiating with the property owners to pick up additional right-of-way for the drainage channel. Next slide. So there's unknown project timing in regards to this. It's conceptual in scope. We don't know exactly what it is going to be. And so we need to avoid tying current requirements to a conceptual project. Next slide. The conceptual plans do show, next slide please, do show a maintenance road 20 to 26 feet wide, which would be adjacent to this channel improvement. Next slide. Here you can see a cross-section of the maintenance road, and they tend to grade out the channel and, yes, put in some nice riparian habitat. Next slide, please. Now, what staff is recommending is an across-the-board blanket buffer. Say that three times fast. Along the length of the property. Next slide. Let me know when I'm 10 minutes left. Let me know when I have 5 minutes left. Okay. So, this significantly reduces the developable area of this critical site. It limits circulation. It undermines our ability to meet the compliance with the HCD requirements. Next slide, please. So I want to lay out for you, next slide, what this 100-foot buffer would look like. First, this is the expanded 26 feet that the County of Orange is looking to get from the property owner. Next slide. Then there would be the 20 to 26-foot wide maintenance road. Next slide. And then the staff is recommending that we put a 75-feet additional buffer on top of that. As you can see, it really pinches this side out. Next slide. We have an alternative that we think is superior. Next slide. Here's the 26-foot wide expansion of the channel area. Next slide. Then we have the 20-foot wide maintenance road. Next slide, which we would then convert into a multi-use trail. This is the Santa Ana River. It's right there in Newport Beach. We have beautiful bike paths along these drainage channels. Next slide, please. This is a critical trail connection because it would go to the Upper Bay Preserve area, next slide, which has all sorts of trails and multi-use trails and equestrian areas, and those trails are all going through environmentally sensitive habitat area. Next slide. Then we would like to have a 25-foot setback on top of that, and this would create 50 feet, which is consistent with what our local coastal program says currently. Next slide. And in that area, as staff has indicated they would like to see in this area, we would have seating areas with escher planted on the sides and little pocket exercise areas. Next slide. Now, alternatively to the additional 50-foot buffer that staff is recommending, which is really not very utile, we are recommending that we have two pocket parks on the opposite ends of the property. That would be 1.4, 1.5 acres, which is exactly the acreage for the additional 50-foot buffer that staff is recommending to you. Next slide. But we think this would be a far superior recreational opportunity for the general coastal zone going public. These are two parks I had the honor to represent the city on and that the Coastal Commission approved. These are real live playgrounds and provide that recreational opportunity on both ends of the property. Next slide. One of the pocket parks would be next to an existing park that the city of Newport Beach has. Next slide. It's Mesa Birch Park, and it has an existing area. So we're creating this focus for the general public to come in and recreate and then jump onto this trail system that we want to create that would take you all the way down into the Newport Upper Bay Preserve. Next slide. This is the recreational opportunity that would be, air quotes here, lost. This is the golf course. It's a private golf course. And as you can see, it doesn't exactly bring a lot of the public into the coastal zone. So what we are proposing with the multi-use trail, the exercise areas, and the pocket parks to replace this golf course along with the critical housing that HCD is requiring of us, would obviously, in our opinion, be a significant improvement from the recreational opportunities that we have out there right now. Next slide, please. So these are key outcomes, and this is in the handout, and I suspect I'm getting low on time here, but it supports the housing feasibility that is required of us by the state of California and balances that with the Coastal Act policies for environmental protection, because it would have the setbacks already promulgated in our local coastal program from the expanded riparian area, and it would maximize public access and recreational opportunities. Next slide. This is anchored in our certified implementation plan. This is Newport Beach Municipal Code Section 21.30B. You can read the numbers. But basically, this is what we are proposing, consistent with the buffers from a riparian area that this Coastal Commission has certified in the city of Newport Beach citywide. We're not asking for anything special here. It's already vetted and certified. It's consistent with the Coastal Commission's previous actions within the city, and it avoids introducing unknown and unproven regulations predicated upon a speculative project, which is the Delphi enhancement, and it allows the flexibility to where we can maximize access and protect the environment and still get that critical housing. Next slide. And this is just another citation from our LCP in regards to the ESHA buffers and allowing that flexibility, something that the commission has already acted on historically. Next slide. So with that, I want to wrap it up. How much time do I have retained for rebuttal? 5.5 minutes. Thank you. I'm available for any questions that you may have now or after the rebuttal. Thank you, commissioners.
Thank you. Okay, Galen.
All right. Looks like we have Jim Oster in the room.
Thank you. I am a golfer, live in the neighborhood of the Newport Beach Golf Course. And I represent Save Newport Beach Golf Course, that we've been fighting to save our golf course from development for the last 5 years, since the owners put that property on the housing element list. And so far we've been successful in beating off 4 different development proposals by the owners to kill the golf course. Their main objective is to profit, make an enormous profit on their original investment that was purchased at a low price from the Irvine Company, intended only to be a golf course, because that is the only safe and appropriate use of this land, which is directly in the John Wayne Airport flight path, which was not mentioned by the representative from the city. This is in a zone that the Airport Land Use Commission has rejected for development because of the crash and noise and air pollution risk for any high-density uses in this location. It is the most inappropriate location for housing. When our neighborhood was annexed by Newport Beach, the entire half of our community of single-family homes with goats in the street and chickens and horses in the backyard was condemned for high-density office space because of its proximity to the airport and the noise pollution. This site that the city is now proposing for housing, they had to modify the noise impact. I'm sorry, how much time do I have? I'm sorry?
Your time is up, sir. Please finish
your
thought.
No, I'm sorry. I need more time. I'm the only representative to fight his 15-minute presentation.
Sir, please finish your thought. You can make your final.
Okay. The bottom line is the city already has 5,000 units in the pipeline to meet their housing requirement, the element housing requirement. There is no need to destroy our golf course for this housing. They already have met the required number of units. They have not revised their application, which stated that this site was essential. It is no longer essential. You can save Newport Beach Golf Course. You can approve the housing on the other areas, but it's entirely inappropriate. And the city will be liable.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. I don't think that's fair enough time.
Thank you.
All right. Next up on Zoom, we have Adam Leverins, Wade Womack, and Heather Sislak. First up, Adam Leverins. Mr. Leverins, go ahead, please.
Is my audio coming in?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great. Thank you. First, Chair Harmon, I want to file a protest. It's my understanding that for agenda items, speakers are to get up to 3 minutes at the discretion of the chair. I don't know how many speakers there are, but as a previous speaker noted, the time that Mr. Schmitz had, 3 minutes, I think, would be appropriate.
Sir, thank you. Your protest is noted.
Oh, okay. I'm mainly talking about affordable housing. You've heard from me on that. That's a concern for all of us, especially in the coastal zone. And a lot of stuff that the city manipulates Coastal into approving doesn't work out to benefit affordable housing. Before you is a manufactured home park. This is in the early 20-teens. I count over 50 manufactured home units. It's on the harbor. There's a public accessible beach in front of all of this. Next slide, please. In about 2014, the city bulldozed it and turned it into a wonderful park in their Harbor Department headquarters. But they converted more than 30, less than 50% of it to paid access only. And I manufactured homes are affordable housing. Next slide, please. These are the no trespassing signs they put up on that 40 some odd percent of property that was formerly a public beach. Next slide, please. In 2024, the city bought a triplex on Balboa Peninsula between the ocean and the harbor, about 2,400 square feet, $2.6 million. To bulldoze it and turn it into a parking lot. It's two blocks away from a 614-space parking lot. I continually contest at council that parking is a crisis 3 months a year in Newport. Housing is a crisis year-round. And if the city waits 5 years to redevelop this property, they don't have to replace it like for like with affordable housing. As you know, they're trying to eliminate the 51 affordable housing units that have liveaboard permits in the harbor. And it's just the onslaught. They give exemptions to developers, keep cutting the percentage. The affordable housing is never getting built. And passage of this plan, which I expect, is going to lead down the same path. And I just want you to recognize what is happening here. And in spite of the glowing report Mr. Schmitz just presented. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leverins. Next up, we have Wade Womack, Heather Sislak, and Jim Mosier. Wade Womack, please go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Very barely.
If I could have the 3 minutes, that would be great, but here we go. Good morning, Commissioners, Chair Harmon. Thank you for the time. Here's the Newport Beach Golf Course rate sheet. It's $20. It's low cost. The city consultant has misrepresented to you that this is a private club. That is false. It is a public course, 50% subsidized by the County of Orange as it relates to the back nine. Please protect this affordable recreational access in the coastal zone. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Go back one slide, please. Thank you. Here's your staff report. If you look in the green boxes, it indicates that we need 1,874 units and that 1,400 are in the coastal zone or something to the effect. This is materially wrong. This is incorrect. You've been given false or inaccurate information by the city's consultant. Next slide, please. Here is the city's CEQA document. Here you will see the RENA requirement is 4,800, which we all agree on. And next, in the green box, you will see that the city has allotted for and created 10,000 housing sites in Newport Beach. Staff thinks bending the rules and getting you to bend your allegiance to the Coastal Act, they believe, based, I believe, on misinformation, they believe you need to bend all the rules to accommodate this niche housing that's going to gyp a lot of people at a lot of coastal access and affordable recreation and otherwise. If I may conclude, since my slides were messed up.
Please, your closing thought.
Thank you. Staff concludes these LCP amendments are necessary to meet housing needs, but that conclusion depends entirely on the accuracy of the housing numbers presented to you. And this appears to
thank
be
you, material.
Thank you, Mr. Womack. Next up, we have Heather Cieslak. Looks like you may be logged in under Newport Bay. If you can hear us, Ms. Cieslak, please go ahead.
Yes, and thank you, Chair Harmon and commissioners. I was wondering if you can also have Dr. David Banwellis, he is an attendee, added as a panelist, so he could speak directly after me to finish our Conservancy's comment.
Sure, please go ahead.
Thank you so much. So respected Chair Harmon and the rest of the commissioners, I'm Heather Cieslak, Operations Director for Newport Bay Conservancy. I'm representing Newport Bay Naturalists and Friends Board of Directors, and we wish to comment on this amendment for the City of Newport Beach. While we definitely recognize the importance of meeting housing needs, we are deeply concerned about the implications of this amendment, particularly on the impacts of the Upper Newport Bay Ecological Reserve, the Upper Newport Bay Nature Reserve, the city's Big Canyon Nature Park, and all those natural open spaces that represent the Upper Newport Bay. This area is one of Southern California's most important estuarine ecosystems, supporting migratory birds, native biodiversity, and critical ecological processes. This proposed increase in residential areas directly adjacent to the reserve raises significant habitat degradation, water quality, and long-term integrity. We believe that this proposal does not significantly demonstrate consistency with the California Coastal Act, particularly with respect to protecting these environmentally sensitive habitat areas and maintaining water quality. The proposed overlay allows for residential development regardless of underlying use, we've heard that, enabling conversion of open spaces such as the golf course and these low density areas. These landscapes, while not formally designed as habitat, function as these ecological barriers and movement corridors. Their conversion would result in reduced habitat permeability, loss of transitional space that is critical for the wildlife and endangered species that the Upper Newport Bay supports. It also, this high density development will increase these impervious surfaces, leading to greater stormwater runoff from entering the bay. Within the bay is already sensitive to nutrient loading, is already designated as an impaired water body. These additional nutrients will exacerbate an ecological stress to impair water quality. I'd like to now turn it over to Dr. David Banwellis, who will finish off the Conservancy.
Thank you.
Good morning. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Please go ahead.
Oh, yes. Privileged to be here with you this morning. And one thing I wanted to touch on that our colleague Heather mentioned was the stormwater runoff. And one of the things not mentioned about the Dalhai Channel is the Dalhai Channel goes through a lot of the urban reaches in this area. And what happens when big rainfall events happen is all of the material from the roadsides, the heavy metals and pollution that we have from brake dust, from tires, from air pollution, is collected and is deposited in that drainage. And so every time there's a big rain, while we love rain in the bay, some of those things add to the nutrient load as well as the pollutant load in the area. And so one of the biggest concerns we have as a conservancy is that golf course there, while it doesn't serve the highest habitat quality compared to the salt marsh and the Upper Newport Bay Ecological Reserve, but it also is a way for that water to collect and surfaces to allow water infiltration before that reaches the bay. And so when we put more impervious surfaces in the Delhi Channel, that runoff will increase. And so if we allow that golf course to transition to something else, they will increase the pollutant load and detract from the Delhi Channel improvement project. And so one of the things we need to think about is also sea level rise and thinking about in the next, not 5 to 6 years, but the next couple decades. And we need to choose wisely where we put development because some of the areas that we see today and that we're able to accommodate housing won't be that, there won't be that accessible in the future with sea level rise. And during king tides, many of these areas may flood, and that increases the probability that some of these communities will be impacted in the future. And so in closing, we really need to think about lowering impervious surfaces to address pollutant runoff and also think critically about sea level rise for the coming decades. So I implore the commission to think very critically about the next step, and housing is something we do need, but not in these particular locations. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Jim Mosier, Terry Welsh, and Carolyn Colesworthy. Mr. Mosier, please go ahead.
Thank you. I believe this item should be continued for at least three reasons. First, the addendum posted late yesterday alters proposed policy 2.2.11-1 to permanently enshrine in the city's certified coastal land use plan a system of housing overlays in focus areas consistent with a, quote, housing element, end quote, without identifying the specific version of the housing element it is referring to. Housing elements change, yet this policy will remain, which incidentally appears to endorse adding 5,537 units of likely market rate housing in poorly defined parts of the coastal zone, which, as Mr. Womack pointed out, is far over the slightly over 1,000 units that staff report indicates the city is seeking capacity for. Second, the addendum acknowledges for the first time a city resolution that added a request to increase height limits currently in the IP, but it continues to recommend approval, saying that height concerns will be addressed in the CDP process. If the CDP process were sufficient to address all height concerns, there would be no reason for any IP to impose any height limits at all. So I think before changing the IP, that height increase request needs to be analyzed. Third, only two of the coastal zone sites requested would increase the density of housing at locations where it already exists. At all others, the new housing may potentially displace higher priority uses. I provided in writing the example of one of the city's few waterfront properties long preserved in the coastal planning for marine commercial uses. As I read the proposed modifications, if the marine uses don't currently exist on that site, as they may not, the city will have no requirement to continue to preserve current acreage of marine uses. I think the modifications need further refinement. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Terry Welsh, followed by Carolyn Colesworthy. Terry Welsh, please go ahead.
Hello, commissioners. My name is Terry Welsh, and I'm the president of the Coastal Corridor Alliance, and I very much appreciate the opportunity to speak. Coastal Corridor Alliance urges the commission to not approve this amendment as it is currently written, but rather go with your staff's recommendations. And I want to give you a really good reason why. Our organization, along with many, many other people and the tribal community, worked for decades to create a publicly owned, permanently protected public open space, formerly known as Banning Ranch, now known as Randall Preserve. But there's one last little missing piece. Next slide, please. There's 11 acres of open space. It's owned by the Newport Mesa Unified School District. That's the local public school district. And as the city's amendment, as it is currently written, has a housing overlay on these 11 acres, despite the fact that there's documented California gnatcatcher, burrowing owl, and vernal pool habitat on these 11 acres, and These 11 acres are in an area of deferred certification. So please, commissioners, do not approve this amendment as it is currently written and go with your staff's recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, we have Carolyn Colesworthy. Ms. Colesworthy, please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, we can hear you. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much. Good morning, Commissioners, Chair, and staff. My name is Caroline Colesworthy of Colesworthy Real Estate Services. I'm a third-generation broker, born and raised at the Bay. I live at the Bay now. I walk these areas frequently. I would like to emphatically ask you to see the maximum buffers around our very sensitive habitat. I realize that native plants are not always seen to be as important as they are, but if we want to avoid extinction, the area is more sensitive than you may realize. Building high density here, and I am in favor of housing, but building high density here will impact with impervious surfaces that will cause flooding, light pollution, sound pollution, and increased traffic will come. And so I realize it's a matter of how large the buffers are. And I want to emphasize that I appreciate the broadest buffers to protect the Bay. The Bay is coastal wetlands for the California coast as well as the West Coast. And we are the stewards. Also, I don't hear tribal recognition, and it seems that this is going too quickly because they are not here speaking. This was a very short window to be ready to speak. We need to maximize access, but you'd speak about maximizing access, but we need to maximize habitat. And I'm also wondering if there is any compromise if the developments could be required to have a native plant pallet in addition to a buffer. But that seems to me a negotiating possibility because those spaces will have landscaping as all housing projects do, and native plants are so helpful.
There are no more speakers, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, and thank you to the public. I'll return to the applicant, who has 5 minutes and 30 seconds for rebuttal.
Before we start the clock, we need to go to slide 35. Standing by. And keep the clock up for me. Don't want to get in trouble with the chair. Again, for the record, Don Schmitz on behalf of the City of Newport Beach. There was actually some very good testimony there, and I appreciate the opportunity to address that. But I do want to start off by stating once again, and we cannot lose sight of this, in the fifth cycle, HCD required us to have 5 additional units. And they popped that up to 4,845 additional units, irrespective of our appeal. The comments by Adam in regards to Marina Park, I had the honor of representing the City of Newport Beach and Marina Park. It's one of the proudest projects that I have ever represented. Yes, we took out a bunch of mobile homes, many of which were on state lands, and we created a beautiful transient marina and open green space and maximized public access. I do appreciate the comments of Wade. I most certainly did not mean to intimate that The golf course was a private club. It's a privately owned golf course, which is open to the public, that brings damn few people into the coastal zone. And the 10,000 units which he referenced included the Banning Ranch, which Mr. Welsh, who I've known for years, referenced. That's suggested modification number 3 to take that out. It's a deferred certification area. It's not part of the equation that's in front of you today. And the city, as the applicant, is completely supportive of that suggested modification to remove that area that Mr. Welsh was concerned about. If I could go to the next slide, please. Here's the nightmare scenario. It's called the builder's remedy. And if a city falls out of compliance with HCD, a property owner can come in and submit for a builder's remedy, and they can ignore the density, they can ignore the heights. This is what happened to Beverly Hills. 165 to 175 units, and they were relegated to telling their constituents the only influence we can have on this application is what the balconies look like. And last time I checked, Beverly Hills has some pretty significant resources to fight these things, and they lost badly in court. Next slide, please. Santa Monica, another builder's remedy project. Sacramento is not playing around with us in regards to this. They are demanding that communities all up and down the state provide the housing, and the counties and the cities understand that this is very often not popular with their constituents, but we have no choice. Next slide, please. So public access and recreation. There was a number of comments as it pertained to buffers, water quality. Couldn't agree more. This golf course here, however, was developed in 1966. It does not have the protections of the certified local coastal program that was certified by this coastal commission as it pertains to grading and drainage and filtration of runoff. Any project that is proposed on any one of these sites has to meet the rigorous environmental protections that is within the certified LCP. They have to get a coastal development permit. You're not being asked to approve a project. You are being asked to approve a housing overlay that will allow this municipality to stay in compliance with HCD requirements. Is there a surplus? There always is. Every single county, every single city is required by HCD. They don't bring it right down to the decimal point in regards to the number of units which are available because they know there will be a case-by-case review in regards to these sorts of things. But we have about 10% of the housing allotment within the coastal zone. And as I referenced in my initial part of my presentation, the Coastal Act and federal and state law require us to distribute the housing, and that doesn't mean keeping anybody outside of the coastal zone that can't afford a single-family home. We have to have at least a reasonable percentage of it within the coastal zone. And this alternative that we have here, the setbacks that we are proposing, is not a minimalist approach. It is the riparian area setback that is already in our local coastal program. Staff is asking for the extra 50 feet, so maybe there could be some additional recreational opportunities. But we are proposing these two pocket parks at 1.5 acres, which will be far superior to an additional strip of 50 feet, without taking this site out as a practical location to get the critical housing that we need. Next slide, please. What is before you today meets the Coastal Commission's objectives. It balances out the protection of the environmental resources. It maximizes public access. Please note that on these overlay sites, which has priority uses, this is written, and staff was rigorous about this, that it does not displace those priority uses, and we are consistent with that. It provides a clear regulatory path. It maintains those environmental protections. I want to end by, again, thanking your staff for all the incredible hard work, and I am available for any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. With that, we will close the public hearing and return to our staff. Mr. Schwing.
Thank you, Chair Harmon. I just want to start by thanking the public for their comments today, as well as wanted to extend our appreciation as well to the city for working with us on this amendment. It was a long time coming and a lot of work. So it's great that we are just basically down to this one issue. But, you know, to underscore, this is an LCP amendment. We don't have a specific residential project in front of us on any one of the sites that is part of this proposal. So I do want to underscore that. However, there is a specific project that we are concerned about, and that is the Santa Ana Del High Channel project that we do have an application filed with us, and we will be bringing to the commission in the very near future. We understand the county is, they have obligations to build this project, and we can expand a little bit about that, including the habitat restoration that is part of it. So protecting that habitat is really key. As far as I understand that project, if you know permits are in place and whatnot, could begin construction as soon as next year. This particular site, it is a parks and rec site, and that has been a major concern for us. Initially, when we looked at that proposal, we looked at excluding the site because of that particular use. There were other sites within the program that had, you know, other kinds of commercial uses, and they were higher priority, but we weren't as concerned about mixing residential with those. It was this parks and rec site that caught our attention. So our main goal here has been, number one, protect the habitat. Number two, provide for the public access and rec component that property provides if it does, in fact, get developed in the future with residential. And that is where this 100-foot space comes into play. It's both for biological protection. It's also for recreation and open space. And, we have to mention that this channel, it's a channel. There's water running down it. The site gets developed with the residential. Next door to it, there's hazards there, flooding hazards that we need to be mindful of with a sufficient setback. With regard to the biological resources, we do have Corey Clatterbuck with our biological unit, and I do want to ask her to speak to the concerns we have and what we're trying to achieve with that buffer. So Corey, as soon as you're ready, please go ahead.
Sure. Good morning, commissioners. So like Carl said, I have just a few points to add regarding the ESHA buffer policies and the proposed channel project. So first, a 100-foot riparian buffer is not unique within LCPs. Other LCPs require this size buffer, including local municipalities like the city of San Clemente. Like other LCPs, certain uses are allowed within the ESHA buffer and provides for those uses to be compatible with the resources. Staff's proposed language details the size of the riparian buffer as well as those uses. Some LCPs go even further with policies that encourage low impact uses adjacent to the ESHA buffer rather than just within the ESHA buffer as proposed here. The goal of any ESHA buffer is first and foremost to protect habitat values. Recreation and open space may be recognized as compatible benefits, but should not drive the design or the size of the ESHA buffer. The city's suggested alternative would like to reconfigure ESHA buffer area as open space. We appreciate the city's desire to have a certain amount of open space, but the buffer functions could be compromised if not primarily aligned along the feature, and therefore lessen the intent of the buffer. The Santa Ana Del High Channel drains directly into Back Bay of Newport Bay, and it's one of our critical remaining coastal wetlands. A Section 404 permit condition issued by the Army Corps of Engineers requires mitigation for work completed in the channel since 1986. And the proposed channel project design creates marsh and riparian vegetation in the channel that is planned to support sensitive species like light-footed Ridgeway's rail. Staff suggested modification supports the goals of the channel project. and further protects the wildlife in Upper Newport Bay that may use the newly vegetated areas in the channel. Lastly, I want to acknowledge Ms. Ciesliak and Dr. Banuelis, who discussed the importance of transitional space and water quality for habitats in Back Bay. These are some of the benefits of low-intensity uses in staff's proposed ESHA buffer and further supports the necessity of buffer size and uses in this amendment. With that, I'll turn it back to the room.
Just wanted to close real fast. I don't have much substantively to add to what the staff did. They did a great job responding to some of the questions. I do want to echo my thanks to the city. Again, it's a lot of work to come down to this one issue, so just want to appreciate that. And for the speakers who are coming out to recognize all these competing uses and needs in this community. And I think what you're seeing here is our attempted balance. You know, we are trying to accommodate many different needs and uses for this community. And that includes habitat, as was so well described by our ecologist, as well as some of the speakers from the Conservancy and others, and the need for additional housing in some of these communities. So Newport Beach being one example. So I think, again, we will leave it to you to tell us whether we got the right balance struck here. But we worked really hard to try to, again, find ways for housing that protect our coastal resources. This is one of the most ecologically valuable and sensitive areas in this region. Upper Newport Bay and Newport Bay generally is a critically important ecological resource for the whole area. So it is important to protect, and that the new habitat that will be along this channel is going to be used and critical for some of the species that use this area. So that's why, again, just to reiterate what our staff has said before, we thought that buffer was really important. That said, you know, there will be a loss of some open space generally as proposed if a project does go forward, and we just want to acknowledge that. But again, trying to find balance here is where we landed. So I'll turn it back to you, Chair, and we're available for questions and interested in the Commission's discussion.
Thank you very much. Thank you to everyone who's participated so far. So I'll return to the Commission and start with Commissioner Loewenberg.
Dr. Huckabee, could you just define what the one issue is?
Yes. So the one issue is related to this one site, this golf course site, and okay. There's a housing overlay, and we have recommended a modification for you to approve that would include a 100-foot buffer from the habitat that is to be built to be planted and associated with the restoration project that was discussed.
But the golf course would go away.
The golf course would go away with our modifications.
Okay. And how many units?
It could. I'm sorry. That's a good. It could go away. We'd have no projects in front of us.
Right, right, right. No, I understand.
But the overlay would allow for that.
Correct. And how many units could be put on that site, the golf course site?
So that would be a better question, I think, for the city.
Please.
But also that amount with and without the buffer,
yeah,
please.
Yeah.
600.
Yeah. For the record, Don Schmitz, the maximum would be just below 700 on this site. In regards to with or without the buffer, that is a pivotal question and also a very difficult one to answer without actually designing a project. We have to meet certain setbacks. We have to have circulation. But what we do know, and this is why we gave you suggested modification number 6 in your handout, if you take a look at the exhibit, the 100-foot really pinches the ends and makes the east and west end of the property virtually unusable from a circulation standpoint. So we thought we would dedicate that to park. And then we also have to make sure that we are consistent with the LCP requirements for height and drainage. So I don't know exactly what the number would be till we design a project.
Okay. My next question is, thank you.
Thank you.
There have been different numbers thrown around. Can we verify? There's this number of 4,500-ish required by the state. And there was a claim made that there are 10,000 units that could be approved now. Did I misunderstand that, or where are we on that? Because if we could carve out, if they could meet their goals, but we could do something with the golf course, Is there something there? That's what I'm trying to get at. And you know I'm very much in favor of creating as much housing as possible, but I also feel like having public amenities that are affordable are a part of the quality of life for people in communities that are quite expensive. And being able to play a round of golf for 20 or under $100 leads to the quality of life for people that can't afford to become, you know, who can afford these country clubs? You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. So, you know, I think trying to weigh that, if we could come to something where everybody could be a little happy and a little sad at the same time.
Let me try to answer your question, though we may need some assistance from the city on this. The numbers that were referenced during public comment, we did correct those in the addendum, but I think they were generally talking about, I think Mr. Schmitz mentioned that there were 10,000 total units, both in the coastal. I mean, this was citywide, yeah, which includes both inside and outside the coastal zone. There's a very large part of the city that's outside the coastal zone, and most of the housing allowance that they've come up with through this overlay program is outside the coastal zone. So, and if I understand things correctly, that's around 8,000 units that it's allowed for total in the city. Somewhere a little bit under 2,000 units in the coastal zone. So they do have sufficient capacity in their plan to meet their RENA requirements with or without this site. Although, if I do understand things correctly, if you're trying to provide units in the coastal zone, this site is very important. And the city you may wish to have the city speak to that.
No, that's okay. I'm going to make a proposal at some point. But
thank you, Commissioner Wilson.
So, I mean, from my perspective, I think 100-foot buffer is a minimum to protect this resource in this very limited space. And I do understand it may have an impact on the developability of that site. And honestly, it's like maybe we should be talking about height limits as a way to deal with that in some ways, because I'm looking at the area around there, and it's interesting because we're talking about an area that has open space. And I wanted to ask, we were talking about policies to protect recreational areas kind of like on a square foot space basis, but when we really analyze it, sometimes we talk about density of use. And so when we're changing from golfing, which is, you know, a sport that a lot of people like, but there may be more dense recreational opportunities that might be available in that exchange or in that sort of balance moving forward. Is that what you guys are considering in this? Because is that what you're basically opening this up to, is the having that sort of balancing provision?
Yes, I think that's correct. Okay. And still allowing for that recreational use, but doing it in a different manner than it's currently provided.
Yeah, and just adjacent to this golf course are these like equestrian spaces, which are extremely exclusive, and they're big properties, and they're not being potentially rezoned for multifamily or high density housing. I'm just saying, like, what is the city looking at in terms of those potential rezones or those potentials? And of course, the more exclusive recreational opportunities are highly protected, and the one that's not as exclusive is the one under threat. And so I just want to point that out. And they're next door to each other. And I just think that is, a concern. I mean, there's just some very large properties with very huge, look like estates or whatever those are. I mean, I'm just... You know, why not give the entitlement for a higher density development to those property owners? Mostly because their neighbors would be freaking out, right? And so I just think that we're, you know, it's this So where we look for those opportunities tends to be where we upset the most resourced humans in our environment sometimes. Just pointing that out. So I agree with staff's recommendation on this, and honestly, I think you could, with adjustments to height and setbacks and those other kinds of things, create higher density and create bigger spaces for public recreation and access, which is really needed in this particular zone where I'm looking at it. Because again, most, like, all of it to the south is pretty exclusive. It's not for your everyday resident. So those are my comments. Thanks.
Thank you.
Can I add one more thing to Mike?
Sure.
Has it been thought of to create a 9-hole golf course? Something smaller that people could do twice? I mean, that's done all over. I mean, in San Francisco, we've got Fleming that people do twice. And it's right in the middle of a lot of dense housing. Mm-hmm. And it's great. It's great for people there, and it's very affordable.
Good question. I think I would want to turn that over to the city. I'm not aware of any of those types of proposals.
Mr. Schmitz.
Spot on, Commissioner. Yes, the 9 holes on the county property would be retained with the conversion of the site that we're talking about going into housing. There would still be 9 holes from the existing golf course that would be retained.
Could you? Yeah, let me see. Let me see if I can get the right aerial for you. Right.
While you're setting this up, Mr. Schwing, quick question just for my own clarification. I understand that with the Delphi project, is that impacting the golf course at all, or the golf course will fully remain? Because I think what I'm hearing is some confusion about whether it's just this overlay that will impact the course. My understanding is the Santa Ana Delphi project, which will be coming before us, itself will also already impact the golf course, or is that not true?
That is true. I mean, the project, the channel will be expanded into the golf course property, but what we've recommended accounts for all that.
Right. Into the golf course property that's owned by the county or that's in the coastal zone?
The golf course property is privately owned. It's right. Publicly accessible. The channel next to it is a county facility. The county will be obtaining land from the private property owner to expand the golf course. I mean, the channel. And as far as the golf course, if I understand things correctly, it extends over multiple properties, not just these 4 properties, but you can see just on the other side of the road, mm-hmm. some area of golf course over there. That's outside the coastal zone. Mm-hmm. And that's all part, I believe, of the whole golf course, but we'll leave that to the city to explain.
Trying to get the inset off, can't entirely, but Ben will describe it to you.
Yeah. Please.
Thank you, Don, and thank you, Chair Harmon, Commissioners, for having us today. In the image on the screen, you can see to the lower left side of the red box, there is a 9-hole portion. Yes, thank you. 9-hole portion of property that is county-owned, and that serves as runway protection zone for the John Wayne Airport. So that is not going away for the foreseeable future. And
that has 9 holes?
Yes, that's correct. The middle parcel that is not colored in pink, that is outside of the coastal zone. That has been approved for a wave park. That is a Snug Harbor Surf Park project. And then the southerly portion, which is the sites that we're talking about today, that does have a portion of the golf course. So the comment about the golf course is already affected. The Snug Harbor Surf Park project was approved for the middle parcel, and the property owner has indicated their interest in housing redevelopment. So I just wanted to make sure it's clear. It's owned by 2 different entities. One is county-owned, and that serves as runway protection. That is not going away. That is not part of this project. That is 9 holes. Golf will be retained in a smaller executive fashion.
In the, you've got like a U around.
That's correct. The U blue border, that's the city boundary. So outside of the city boundary and the county and incorporated area, that's owned by the County of Orange, and that's being retained. That's 9 holes.
And what's it zoned?
It's outside of the city zoning, but it's.
Well, it's got a county zoning, doesn't it?
I'm unaware of it, but I know it is limited to golf course because literally behind the red box, that's the John Wayne Airport runway. So you really limited what you can put there.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Okay, Commissioner Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for all the speakers today. Thank you for the presentation, staff. Thanks for all your hard work. You know, talking about HCD again, it's never-ending challenges and Sacramento unfunded mandates that continue to plague all of us. I just want to make sure I'm clear as we discuss the golf course specifically. I mean, at the end of the day, there's nothing that we as a commission can do or say that would keep that golf course a golf course. It is a privately owned golf course. Now, I understand it's for public recreation, but that public recreation could be 50 pickleball courts or something else. So whether it's 8 or 19 or whatever number of holes, it's really irrelevant as far as we're concerned. You know, our concern is there is space for, it's a public amenity for public recreation, but that can be configured however it makes the most sense for that property. Am I correct there?
Yes, I think I follow you, and I think you're right.
Because I bounce all over, so my apologies. Yeah, okay. All right. I am comfortable with staff's recommendation. I also concur with my colleague. I think the 100-foot setback is important, particularly in light of the additional project that's going to be coming down our way soon. I think it's incumbent that we have to take that into consideration. Not that I didn't appreciate the potential for the trail and that recreational aspect of it, and maybe that can be incorporated into whatever is ultimately developed there. But I just think it's critical that we have to maintain that 100-foot buffer for all the reasons that were outlined. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Moreno.
Thank you for the presentation, and congratulations to the city of Newport Beach finding innovative ways to meet the state's mandate and, in essence, HCD's housing mandate. I represent the city of San Diego as a council member, and we have proudly built a lot of housing in the city of San Diego and changed community plan updates, you name it, zoning. Just in my district alone, I've approved 3,000 units of housing, 932 being affordable in my district. I think the pressures of the state to build more housing are very warranted. The number one issue I have in my district is housing. Now, I do recognize that as a coastal commissioner, we have to balance the needs of access to our coast as well as amenities and the environment. But housing matters are an issue that every single agency in the state of California needs to be addressing. Number one, congratulations. I know this is very difficult. I think it's appropriate to turn a golf course into housing. I think it's very appropriate. My only question is, obviously the owner retains the rights and the owner can propose, you know, whatever pencils out. We're not talking about affordable housing on these units, right? Or is there any type of mandate?
Thank you, Commissioner Moreno, for the comment. So we don't have a project before us, but what I would tell you is there are two projects applied for currently in the coastal zone that include affordable housing that are just waiting on this overlay to come into play. On this particular site, again, no project, but I will say that as far as affordable housing propensity or prospective affordable housing, the airport area of the city has seen the most potential for affordable unit production. So I don't think it's out of the question that we would see some level of affordability here.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for answering that. And I too, although the 100-foot buffer is going to take away from the housing units that will be able to be built, I think it balances the need for recreation activities, which are obviously open to the public or will be open to the public. So I do support staff's recommendation. And once again, over 50 meetings for the general public. Just kudos to you guys. Thank you for really stepping up, and I will be supportive of staff's recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Nadoff.
Thank you. I just wanted to
clarify that I think that there's an opportunity here. The staff recommendation with the buffer zone, which I too support, doesn't presuppose the number of units that could be available on this acre. It's mostly just an acreage adjustment rather than a unit adjustment. We don't have a project in front of us, and there are architectural design options that would allow just as much housing units to be built in this area, meeting HCD numbers as well. So kudos to the city for embracing the number that you've been, the arena number, and looking at creative ways to design that. But I don't see that the staff recommendation is going to reduce your ability to meet those numbers, because it's a design option that is available with the zoning that is in your proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Lopez.
Yeah, can I ask for the city's, just generally, we all, obviously the city has a 10% inclusionary requirement. What is the city's? Are you at the 10 or have you gone beyond that? And if so, what's the number?
That's a great question, Commissioner Lopez. So the city does not have a citywide inclusionary requirement in place today. It's part of our housing element policy action to study inclusionary housing. It's been documented that a too high of an inclusionary housing percentage can actually be an impediment to housing. And with Newport Beach, the land values are high. So just a percentage high that is too high would actually hinder housing production. In the airport area, we do have an inclusionary requirement that is 15% for for rent, but that does not apply to this particular parcel, and that is not citywide.
Okay. Thank you. So looking at this project, I think for me, and I've heard a lot of opinions here, obviously we're talking a lot about the golf course itself and the opportunity to recreate on this parcel. And with the trail in place and the two parks and the benefit of also adding the housing over to the top and the access, we're, as has been said so many times, we're not looking at a project. I heard the concerns about permeability, and I've seen incredible projects with permeable pavers put down to allow for that to happen, on-site retention for percolation. I believe that when a project comes, we can address all those pieces. But given what we're looking at today with the balance that we're being asked to execute on, I personally would feel comfortable with 75, somewhere in between, but if the majority is going to 100, it's not a sticking point for me because we don't have a project in front of us. I know that there's other limiting factors like the airport next door, and that height limit may impose a different pressure downward on any desire to go taller. I hear all of these different pieces that will inevitably play into the final project we look at, but I would also hope the city would consider approving smaller units, right, for sort of entry for young people looking for that first unit they can't afford, 1,200, 1,500 square feet in this zip code based on the per square foot cost. And so in that, I don't think we're looking at a unit cap by any decision we're making today, but I know that it's going to put different constraints on the project, and I hope that it will keep it doable. But again, I'm sort of on that percentage looking at the rest of my colleagues here. I'm comfortable with anywhere between 75 and 100. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Wilson, then Commissioner Lee.
Thanks. I just wanted to reference why, and I want to, around the 100-foot setback, and from my perspective and from a watershed perspective, if you would want it to be bigger than this. I want to say, because this location in the watershed is near the end, the bottom, and the problem with this watershed is mostly built out, and so it's not just the capacity of the on-site treatment and storage to slow the flow and to deal with that. You're already at the bottom. It's like your opportunity to actually expand the volume of the channel in this location and its off-site capacity and its off-channel capacity. This is the last that the city has to do that in this particular watershed, and you could hear the stress and the concern from the I don't know, was it Save the Bay or whatever organization it was that was speaking to those concerns. They were speaking directly to the need for treatment of stormwater, and there just isn't a lot of it already in that watershed, and this is the last place before it actually hits the bay. And so I just want to like emphasize, like, as a resource, this having this open piece of property, if this was like almost anywhere else and you weren't pressure to do housing in this area, you would probably use this entire piece of property to modify and contain and treat stormwater as it comes down out of the basin. This would be it. This is your last chance to do it. We just did an Elk River restoration project in Humboldt Bay, bottom of the watershed that's being impacted by sediment and other things. We just approved a huge project, and that there was a tension around the conversion of ag to do that. And in this case, I would say like this is the place. And so for me, like 100 feet is laughable in terms of the ability to actually provide the treatment necessary to deal with that already existing problem. So I just want to, I just encourage the city to it, and the project developer to seek ways to increase density by maybe height and again setbacks, while allowing for opportunities for not just recreation but also stormwater and watershed management in this piece of property. I can't design it from this perspective, and there's not a project there, but I just want to encourage that we really take a look at and value these last remaining vestiges of watershed treatment potential. Thanks.
Thank you. Commissioner Lee.
Environmental systems engineer. I love it. We were talking about that yesterday. Yes, I view this the same way, with the understanding and reading in the addendum that the widening of the channel is mandated for flood capacity. This is like an Army Corps of Engineers requirement. So because of that, it's expanding the capacity, just as Commissioner Wilson described at this sort of last point of no return. And so I didn't view the 100-foot setback or buffer as a arbitrary number or sort of a negotiable number. It's not a speculative project either. It is ESHA. And so the 50-foot ESHA buffer and then the additional buffer seemed like very important requirements that were thoughtfully put together. Even allowing the maintenance path to go through that area is an accommodation to not further reduce the usable land area of the golf course. And so I'm aligned with the staff's recommendation and view that not as a random number that was just come up with that we should negotiate back and forth, but one that was thoughtfully created using science and using the requirements that are put in place by this channel expansion. Yes, private property, so we'll see what happens with it. I'm involved with an educational institution that did acquire a private golf course, is using it for restoration. It's one of the largest privately owned water reclamation underground storage facilities now in the city of Los Angeles. It has a public park component to it, but private property is private property. We'll see what happens with that. But Commissioner Lopez also brought up the inclusionary portion. You're very right in noting that sometimes that inclusionary percentage can be so high that it stalls all projects. We don't want that. But LA's Transit-Oriented Communities program has been wildly successful in increasing density, reducing the average required square footage for units so that you can have smaller, more affordable units. But those usually range from 9% to 12%. Affordability with an increased density, and actually have produced thousands of affordable units that otherwise wouldn't have been built that are in line and part of market rate projects that has been, you know, has produced more affordable units than straight down the middle affordable housing developers in the city of Los Angeles over the last decade.
One.
Both have your mics on. Commissioner Jackson.
One final comment / question, if I could. So assuming there is a project at some point, is it the city's desire to ensure that there is a component to that that is a design affordability by design or percentage that will in fact be affordable, or are we talking about market rate? I mean, you alluded to affordable, and you know, I know you we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know whether you're going to ultimately build on that project or not. But, you know, affordability is, we talk about it a lot, but I know there's a lot of market rate going up. And there's affordability by design, as Commissioner Lopez and Lee alluded to.
Yeah, and that's a great question. I don't have a fantastic answer for you, but I'll try my best. So we are seeing the proposals for smaller units, particularly again in the airport area. I've heard them called smart size units, more geared towards a young professional, someone who doesn't have, you know, screaming kids like I do, who need more room. So we are seeing that happening. In particular with this site, while the city doesn't have an inclusionary percentage, we do have, you know, state density bonus law, which we're seeing be utilized quite frequently in our city. And then also we have a by right approval process. When you include 20% affordable to low or very low income, you forego the Title 20 in our municipal code planning and zoning requirements. A coastal development permit would still be required, but it is a way to streamline and incentivize developers to provide affordability. So while we don't have an inclusionary percentage to apply to the site, I'm not really
policymaker. I get all that, and okay. I appreciate all that. But is it the city's intent to find a developer that is willing to, you know, apply for that 20% density or those things if indeed you do decide to build on this project?
Well, this is a privately owned property, so the city wouldn't be able to tell the developer that they have to build affordable housing.
I understand that. Right. I get the whole HCD and all that. I mean, but by zoning, right? I mean, we get to these numbers by working with property owners for potentially building on said property.
Sure.
Oh, okay.
And we would absolutely promote, you know, affordable housing inclusion therein.
Okay. Yeah, because I know a lot of particularly affluent communities aren't concerned, not to intimate that you aren't. But the focus is on the housing, and particularly in premium locations, and that tends to be more market rate and very little, if any, affordable by design or otherwise.
Sure, and to your point, the city has seen a lot of smaller townhome developments be proposed outside of the coastal zone. And I could see something like that happening here, where it is a more affordable for sale project, even though it doesn't qualify as a technical for affordable unit. In context with the city's broader housing program, it is affordable.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll make my closing comments before turning to Commissioner Wilson for a motion. I would just say dispositionally, I'm generally inclined toward flexibility when the alternative that we're balancing is around housing development, understanding the critical necessity. But I do want to align myself very strongly with the comments of Commissioner Wilson on the biological imperative that we see in this particular area, not only as the stormwater treatment, but just the creek and the restoration opportunity. I mean, this is of profound importance biologically. So I was very much convinced by that. And I think the existence of the Delphi project, for me, makes a huge difference, that it is not speculative, but is indeed already in the pipeline, it really only makes it more important that we observe this. Now, I will say, if for some totally unexpected reason that project goes away, perhaps the city may want to revisit, and that's a conversation we could have at the time. But with that project being where it is in the pipeline, I just, to me, I think 100 foot is really the minimum. So with that said, and with gratitude, this was a really important conversation for us to have as a commission. I think some of these questions we're seeing more and more of, and we will continue to see more and more of, and the balancing work goes to the heart of, I think, what we are obligated to do as coastal commissioners and what our staff works so hard to help us do in conjunction with the city. So really appreciate all the work that brought us to this, and want to celebrate the other sites that we got to yes on. This is one site, and what a huge undertaking this was. So I will proudly be voting yes on this, and I'll turn to Commissioner Wilson.
I believe there's two motions on this. Four? Oh, what did I volunteer for? All right, well, I just echo the sentiment of just the conversation that we're having. Actually, this whole meeting was meaty, in terms of its conversations on all kinds of issues, and I just want to appreciate that. With motion one, I move the commission certify land use plan amendment number 5-NPB-24-0032-2 as submitted by the City of Newport Beach. I recommend a no vote.
Second. Okay, may we have a roll call vote, please? Motion by Commissioner Wilson. I second it, and we're asking for a no vote, please.
All right. Commissioner Hart.
No.
No.
Hart, no. Commissioner Jackson.
No.
Jackson, no. Commissioner Rodoni.
No.
Rodoni, no. Commissioner Lee.
No.
Lee, no. Commissioner Lopez.
No.
Lopez, no. Commissioner Loewenberg.
No.
Loewenberg, no. Commissioner Nadoff.
No.
Nadoff, no. Commissioner Moreno.
Moreno, no.
Moreno, no. Commissioner Wilson.
No.
Wilson, no. Commissioner O'Malley.
No.
O'Malley, no. Chair Harmon.
No.
Harmon, no. The vote is unanimous.
Thank you. Commissioner Wilson.
I move that the commission certify the land use plan amendment number LCP-5-NPB-24-0032-2 for the City of Newport Beach, if modified as recommended by staff, and I recommend a yes vote.
Second. Motion by Commissioner Wilson. I seconded. We're asking for a yes vote. May I have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Jackson.
Aye.
Jackson, yes. Commissioner Rodoni.
Aye.
Rodoni, yes. Commissioner Lee?
Yes.
Lee, yes. Commissioner Lopez?
Yes.
Lopez, yes. Commissioner Loewenberg?
Yes.
Loewenberg, yes. Commissioner Nadoff?
Aye.
Nadoff, yes. Commissioner Moreno?
Moreno, yes.
Moreno, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner O'Malley?
Yes.
O'Malley, yes. Commissioner Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. Chair Harmon?
Yes.
Hart, yes. Harmon, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Great. Thank you. Commissioner Wilson?
All right. Motion number four. I move that the commission certify.
Motion number three.
Oh, three. I was just jumping ahead. I was so excited. Okay, never mind. I move that the commission reject implementation plan number, or excuse me, amendment number LCP-5-NPB-24-0032-2 as submitted by the City of Newport Beach, and I recommend a yes vote.
Second. Motion by Commissioner Wilson. I seconded. We're asking for a yes vote. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Rodoni.
Yes.
Rodoni, yes. Commissioner Lee?
Yes.
Lee, yes. Commissioner Lopez?
Yes.
Lopez, yes. Commissioner Loewenberg?
Yes.
Loewenberg, yes. Commissioner Nadoff?
Aye.
Nadoff, yes. Commissioner Moreno?
Moreno, yes.
Moreno, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner O'Malley?
Yes.
O'Malley, yes. Commissioner Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. Commissioner Jackson?
Aye.
Jackson, yes. Chair Harmon?
Yes.
Harmon, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Great. Thank you. Fourth motion, please.
Yeah, okay. Number four, I move that the commission certify implementation plan amendment number LCP-5-NPB-24-0032-2, if modified as recommended by staff, and I'm still recommending a yes vote.
Second. Thank you. Motion by Commissioner Wilson. I seconded, asking for a yes vote. May we have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Lee.
Yes.
Lee, yes. Commissioner Lopez?
Yes.
Lopez, yes. Commissioner Loewenberg? Yes. Loewenberg, yes. Commissioner Nadoff?
Aye.
Nadoff, yes. Commissioner Moreno?
Moreno, yes.
Moreno, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner O'Malley?
Yes.
O'Malley, yes. Commissioner Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. Commissioner Jackson?
Aye.
Jackson, yes. Commissioner Rodoni?
Yes.
Rodoni, yes. Chair Harmon?
Yes.
Harmon, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Great. Congratulations. Thank you. Thank you to our staff for all the hard work. And I think we're done for the day. So lots of people to thank. I want to start by thanking the City of Gonzales, Commissioner Lopez. This was an excellent week, and we are so grateful for the hospitality that you showed us and that the whole city showed us. To the team, AGP, you guys are the best. Thank you so much. And our staff for the incredible work. This was a great meeting. We really, really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next month in San Pedro.
Thank you. I want to give a special shout out to the city manager of Gonzales, Carmen Gill. She's been really helpful to set up this meeting here,
awesome.
As well as our the center staff who've been helping all week. Jessica and Julie and Martine.
Thank you all so much.